Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Nice to hear that water and that paddling, isn't it? Talking about paddling and camping with our guest today, Timothy Bauer, back with us. He's a water lover, an outdoor enthusiast, and has been paddling around Wisconsin and our neighboring states since 2008. He's also the author of the book Canoeing and Kayaking South Central Wisconsin, 60 Paddling Adventures Within 60 Miles of Madison. So he has some information on paddlers only camping sites, and we'll take a look at some great waterways to paddle. So are you taking a paddling trip? What do you want to know about preparing? What questions do you have? Maybe you've got a great experience to share with us. I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Timothy Bauer, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Hey, Larry. Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure and privilege to be back again.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. Well, I tell you what, lots of people are looking for outdoor activities these days. I've certainly noticed a lot more kayaking in particular along the Yahara River and Monona. Mm-hmm. Has that been your experience as well?
Everywhere. On any given weekend, and obviously not even just some weekdays too, I see more kayaks in particular, like you said, in the back of pickups, in Subarus, on roof racks, lakes, small rivers. I think people have been just cooped up and excited to be outside in a way that I haven't seen in years past. So yeah. The secret's definitely gotten out.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yes,
let's talk about camping with your kayak or canoe. Mm-hmm. What are some of the pluses of combining the two?
I'm biased because other than meeting a new puppy or falling in love, I think I like canoe camping more than anything else in life. I love the simplicity of having all of my gear just with me in one boat and being able to drop the car off at one point and paddle my way however many days I'm lucky to have to be on the water and nights to camp out. There's just a rawness and a serenity to doing that that is, I would argue, unique to car camping. As much as I enjoy car camping and will do it to my dying day, there's an element of simplicity that comes with canoeing and kayaking and camping. Your access to secret recesses is a little bit more agile than traditional car camping and the campgrounds that are catered for vehicles, and that's great. It makes everything really easy and user-friendly. But for those of us who want to just kind of poke our way to something a little bit more off the beaten path, there's nothing better than a boat to get you there.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some of the paddlers-only camping sites.
Mm-hmm. A few years ago, my partner at the milespaddle.com website, Barry Kalpinski, he and I had an idea of a statewide guide to all the places that were essentially boat accessible only. On the website, it's one of the most common questions we receive from people, where's a good place to camp for my kayak or my canoe? And we ourselves love canoe kayaking, camping. And so it's just a natural process to try to put together a statewide map of all the recommended places to go to. It's taken years to do because, like a lot of things, it's a labor of love and sometimes a love of labor. but I'm very proud to say and humbled by Barry's work that we are beginning to roll it out now. And we have a minimum of 30 different sites and locations around the state. It's going to grow as it goes, but we're trying to put those out on milespaddle.com about every 3-5 days or so, just because there are so many, and we want to get a lot of them out now while camping is still on people's brains. They're not universally, or I should say, they're not equally distributed around the state. And what I mean by that is there's more of a footprint for these places in the northern half than the southern half, the western half than the eastern half. The metropolitan conglomerate of southeastern Wisconsin doesn't quite lend itself to some of these more remote getaways than, say, northwestern Wisconsin does. But as long as you're okay with driving, 3-4 hours to get to some of these places and then just leave your car somewhere, there is plenty of great escapes awaiting us.
Well, what is a site like when you're, they're all different, I imagine. But
yeah, it really depends. I would say they probably come in three different varieties. And I'll try to link some of these specifically to give a concrete example. So if you take some streams like the Namekagon and the St. Croix River, those are both considered national scenic rivers. They're in the northwestern part of the state. The Namekagon feeds the St. Croix. Because they're all federal sites, they are all free. Yes, you heard right. They're free. And they are developed campsites. They're spread out, so it's just one site at a time. But you could fit, 2-3 tents at any given site. You can't stay there a whole long time. You got to keep moving each day. But the sites are distributed in such a way that you'll never hear, let alone see, another campsite along the way. And they come with a fire ring, a picnic table, an established conspicuous sign along the waterway telling you that there's a designated campsite along the way. And a little trail to get to the sites. I mean, I've described this once as the Epcot Center, Disney World for paddlers, because it's just so tailored toward paddling. Mm. It has everything you want, plus the scenic beauty along the way. So you have that's probably on the glamorous side of things. Then you'll have a site that is, more like what you'd find in the Boundary Waters, where it's a designated site, but you're not going to have a picnic table. If you do have a fire ring, it's going to be more handmade out of, stone, a little bit more rugged. But still, that's part of why you're getting out there and roughing it intentionally. And I'd say for the third example, that's going to be probably your classic sandbar camping that you would get on rivers like the Lower Wisconsin, the Lower Black River, the Lower Chippewa River. You're on a river, you find a large sandbar island. If it's not occupied already, then it's first come, first serve. You won't really find anything there. Again, that's part of the charm. But you have a sandy oasis to claim as your own, and usually just dig yourself a little fire pit in the sand and set up a tent there. I'd say those are the three categories that your paddlers are likely to find.
And they all sound great in their own way.
Right. I mean, it's really what you're looking for, what kind of gear you've packed ahead of time, and just how much you can obviously fit a lot more gear in a canoe than you can a kayak. So that's also part of the consideration.
Yeah. Timothy Bauer, our guest today, talking with us about combining paddling and camping. We haven't talked about paddling yet, but we'll get to that. His book is called titled Canoeing and Kayaking South Central Wisconsin, 60 Paddling Adventures Within 60 Miles of Madison. And the website he mentioned was milespaddled.com. You can join in, too, with a question or comment or maybe an experience to share. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Let's take a call. Eugene and Viola, thank you for joining us. What's on your mind?
Good morning, Larry. In 1962, my younger brother and I built a pontoon. We put three 15-gallon drums on each side, a board on the back, put a 5.5-4.7 root on the back, and we started here at Viola and took off for Waseca. It took us 4 days down, took us 9 days back. Did a round trip out. I kept a diary all the way down and all the way back. And once the river leaves Steuben, you had flood trash after you round the bend of a river and the Kickapoo wave. After you round, you always got flood trash to go through. We cut our way through all the flood trash all the way to the Wisconsin River. And coming back, we ran out of gas. We went ashore on the wrong side of the river, and then when we came back, we had to swim in the river to get the pontoon across to gas up, pretty much.
But once sounds like one of my misadventures.
The Horseshoe Bend, and that is gorgeous down in there.
Mm-hmm.
That Horseshoe Bend, yeah. And you've, Timothy, you've been there, haven't you?
Yeah, thanks for calling in, Eugene. For those who aren't familiar with the Steuben, Viola area, that's, of course, the Kickapoo River Eugene is referring to. Has the dubious distinction of being called the crookedest river in the world because it meanders so much in its way.
It really does.
Yeah. I believe it's 120 miles long from source to the Wisconsin River at its confluence, and yet from as the crow flies, it's only 60 miles from those two points. So it does a lot of indecisive back and forth. But that's also one of the rivers I would put on the list, both for canoe, kayak, camping sites only, as well as really good bike shuttling. Not necessarily the lower part of the river that Eugene was referring to, but probably the most popular part of the Kickapoo is from Ontario to Rockton, and then Rockton down to Lafarge, and that area is the heart of what's called the Kickapoo Valley Reserve. It's a unique collaboration with the DNR and the Ho-Chunk Nation. So it's not exactly a state park. It's not a private ground. It's not county. It's just kind of all of the above. It's a very special place. It's profoundly beautiful, and there are trails and various different campsites all throughout the network. Some are car accessible, but most aren't. Most you have to either walk to or paddle up to. And the ones you can paddle up to really are not accessible by foot, per se. So it makes for great camping via your kayak or canoe. And then some of the trails through the park are great for bike shuttling. They're really just about as pretty as your time on the water itself. You see everything from a different perspective, but it keeps you off the main roads. It's safe, and it really is just it's a great way to stretch your legs out after sitting in your boat for a couple of hours.
Yeah, maybe you can talk a bit more about what is a bike shuttle and how does it make life easier for paddlers?
Sure. Well, it depends on how hilly it
is. Yeah.
It may not be easy in some parts of the state. The idea of bike shuttling is really quite simply, it takes for granted that you're by yourself, and so you have only one vehicle, and you're paddling a river. Rivers go one direction, so you start at point A and you end up in point B, and you can either work your way upstream, but I don't ever recommend anyone paddle upstream unless you have to. And so the simplest solution to this when you're by yourself is to have a bicycle with you, and to make it easy for folks to envision, you would drive to the takeout first, let's say, drop your bike off there, then drive with your boat still on the car to the put-in, get everything off the car, leave your car at the put-in, start your paddling trip, paddle down from the put-in to the takeout. There you pick up your bike, leave your kayak or canoe, and then pedal your way back to the car, drive your car down in the boat, go home. That's basically how it all works. And like I said, it's unless you feel like jogging back or walking back, it's a bit of a necessity when you're by yourself. But it's also something I do sometimes when I'm with another friend, and we just want to take one car. We don't want to have two cars. We don't want to double our carbon footprint. We want to get a little bit more exercise. Whatever the reason, I honestly think bike shuttling is fun. You know, as I just mentioned, when I've been sitting on my bum for 2-3 hours, sometimes even longer, in a kayak or a canoe, I want to stretch my legs out. I want to get some exercise to the lower half of my torso. And it's, you do see the environment differently. You see the landscape differently. You see things on the road or a trail that, you don't necessarily on the river and vice versa. So it just makes for kind of an all-encompassing good exercise to be outside in on a given day. So I often started paddling by myself in the earlier years, and just by right of necessity, I did a whole lot of bike shuttling. Some places are better than others, of course. Some county roads are quiet and relatively flat. Some state highways are going to be busy and not have enough shoulder room. And then sometimes you really get lucky and you find a river with a designated state trail that runs parallel to it, and you get the best of both worlds doing that. So we could talk a little bit more about that, some of the better places that are coupled with some of the better rivers that are coupled with designated state trails with them.
And we will do that. Timothy Bauer, our guest today, talking paddling, pedaling, and camping. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer, Tyler Ditter, our engineer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network, talking paddling, pedaling, and camping with our guest today, Timothy Bauer. Great to have him along. The website he mentioned earlier is milespaddled.com. Some people have asked about that. His book is Canoeing and Kayaking South Central Wisconsin, 60 Paddling Adventures Within 60 Miles of Madison. Take some calls now. You can join in again at 800-642-1234 or email at ideas@wpr.org. Brian in Green Bay. Brian, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
I took a recent kayak trip on the Brule River, which borders Wisconsin and Michigan, and was wondering if you might have an idea of some maps that would be fairly accurate for campsites on any of the northern rivers. We what we ran into is it was marked for two campsites within 10 miles of each other, and they did say primitive. However, we could not locate either of the campsites. That had happened to us on one other trip on the Pike or the Pine 2 years ago. And then I had done a trip on the Wisconsin headwaters where they had a very clearly marked area, which was nice. But that's what we've run into. I've kind of come to the conclusion that what we probably should be doing is marking our drop-in point, our pull-out point, and then trying to find the point in the middle where the campsite is. But I know that's not always accessible by vehicle. So just wondering if there was a good site for the northern waters.
All right, Timothy.
And it's a heck of a coincidence because I myself was up also paddling the Brule over Memorial Day weekend just a couple months ago. And I, too, was on the lookout. We were not paddle camping at the time, but I'm still always curious about these things. And so I was on the lookout for any of the sites, because I think I knew that there were one or two out that way, and you are right, they are hard to find. In terms of a site and a map, there's a great guide called Wisconsin Trail Guide, I believe it's called. I'm assuming it's a .com. They have trails for paddling, trails I think also for hiking and maybe cross-country skiing as well. I've mostly looked at it for the paddling portion. And the Brule River is one of those streams listed in the guide. And they do have a map and corresponding camp information with it. It's not a bad idea to check in with the folks at the Chequamegon-Nicolet National Forest. They would probably have the most specific and targeted information about where to find some of these on-the-water primitive sites. They're there, but they probably don't get a whole lot of use, and I would imagine it's easy for some of the trees and brush to hide some of the entranceways to it. I remember thinking, too, that it's a bit of a blurred line sometimes what's public land and what's private land up that way. And I understand the DNR just published a new public access or public lands guidebook for the whole state. So any of those three, I think, would be good choices to find some of those campsites.
So it's primitive campsites, but it might be nice if you had a GPS location.
Yeah, I mean, when in doubt, that's a good standby to have.
Brian, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Cole in Stevens Point, on to you now. Hi, Cole.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was just wondering if the guest had any recommendations on affordable yet reliable equipment to start out for someone that's interested in paddling.
Well, sure. Thanks for the call, Cole. I mean, it really just depends on what type of paddling you anticipate doing. First of all, there's canoeing versus kayaking, and not that they're, you know, different or better. They're just what your preference is. But even within the range of canoes, there's going to be a wide variety. Kayaking, it's even more so because you have sea kayaks, you have recreational kayaks, you have day-use kayaks, whitewater kayaks, and everything in between. The best advice I would give is for you or anyone starting off and wanting to really invest in the gear is if you already know that you want to get into paddling, you've borrowed somebody's or you've rented and you know for sure, yes, I want to make this investment in the gear, then go to a local shop. You want to test out as many boats as you can. Talk to the sales staff there about where you think you're going to be paddling. Are you going to be on lakes and ponds and, you know, still water, or are you going to do some small rivers? Are you going to do fast rivers? It really just depends. I mean, it's hard to find a kind of silver bullet boat for all of those environments because they do range so widely. But if, generally speaking, you're going to be in a certain targeted range of areas and conditions, then the staff at a store can direct you to, you know, probably three or five different kinds of boats to sit in and ideally be able to test paddle because that's the best way you'll know what boat is the most accommodating for you. In terms of the gear itself, that's a little bit more universal. There are differences in certain types of paddles, but, you know, that's really starting to dive into the weeds. Same thing with your life jacket and some of the other essentials that you'd have in a dry bag and whatnot. A lot of that stuff is pretty universal once you figure out what kind of boat is going to be best for you.
Yeah. I think there is some relationship between price and ease of kayaking.
There is.
I have a Solera 120 and a Kestrel 120 and a Tribute 120 for different members of the family.
Mm-hmm.
And they all seem to work well given what we want. I really like that Solera 120. It's a stable kayak.
Mm-hmm.
that, but also there's places to put things too.
Right. I think personally that a 12-foot boat is a good Goldilocks length, especially if it tracks well. You don't need a super long kayak or canoe to paddle a lake. You don't necessarily want an 8-foot long boat to paddle a lake because you're likelier to do a whole lot of fishtailing back and forth. Conversely, a 12-foot boat also is pretty short enough to remain nimble and agile in a river where you've got some moving water and maybe some obstacles you need to dodge, in real time. So just generally speaking, I'm a fan of that length of boat.
Yeah. Cole, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Jeff in Superior, it's your turn. Hi, Jeff.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. I invite you to think of the experience, I was hoping you would touch on this topic, like a relationship, because I've canoed the Brule River, in northern Wisconsin there, Brule, Wisconsin, the Brule River State Forest, where Calvin Coolidge spent his summer White House in 1928. I've canoed it as a teenager in my 20s and my 30s and my 40s and my 50s, and this November I'll be 60, and I've had different experiences every time I do it. I consider it a relationship. The river tells me how it feels, and the weather will change, and I've had some drama, and I've had some, like you say, serene moments where you're just in heaven. So yeah. I just wanted to say the Brule River really does bring you into its heart and sometimes teaches you things.
Oh, I couldn't agree more, Jeff. That's very poetic, too. Just to be clear for our listeners, because this is a perennial source of ambiguity for paddlers in Wisconsin, there's a Bois Brule River in northwestern Wisconsin, which I believe is what Jeff is referring to, surrounded by a state forest. And then further to the east, Brian, I believe, from Green Bay was referring to, that is just the regular Brule River, which forms the boundary for Wisconsin and the UP for part of the boundary. So two rivers with Brule, but they are two different rivers entirely. I've had the good fortune of being on the Bois Brule with friends a few years at a Labor Day weekend, and it really is one of the most astonishing streams that I've ever been on that certainly exists in Wisconsin. Just clear, beautiful water, spring-fed. It's quiet in some places. It's downright ferocious with rapids in other places. You begin at a swampy, boggy marsh in the beginning, kind of like the headwaters area of it, and then you finish in Lake Superior at a sandy spit, and you feel like you're in the middle of the edge of the planet. And you get all that within 35, 40 miles. I mean, it really packs quite a variety in that time. And coincidentally, there are two delightful campgrounds along the river itself. So they're car campgrounds or vehicle campgrounds. They're not necessarily exclusive to paddlers, but one of the unique attributes about the two campgrounds in the state forest is because they are located right on the river, you could start your trip or end your trip directly at the campground you happen to be staying at. So it does eliminate a little bit of the driving and some of our carbon footprint. And it is kind of a neat novelty to begin or end your trip only a few feet away from your tent.
That's very true. But Brad in Port Washington, on to you now. Hi, Brad.
How you guys doing today?
Good. Hey, appreciate the call.
Calling because I've been kayaking now for about like 5-6 years. As of probably 2 years ago, I had my second child, and I'm just kind of curious, at what age would you guys recommend kayaking in general, and then also what kind of kayak would you guys, are there any particular doubles or anything that's made for, I guess you could say, toddlers, 5 years old, things like that, or is it just kind of standard doubles and singles?
That is a good question, Brad. I'm probably not the best person to ask, as I'm a childless adult with a Boston Terrier only, who I have yet to be able to train to hold on to a paddle. But I do have a bunch of friends with kiddos, so the question is no less relevant. I think from what I've heard of other people give advice about paddling with kids is get them comfortable in a canoe first. I wouldn't even really think about kayaks for a while. I think just their orientation to being able to sit in a canoe. Obviously, they're not going to be doing any work, but just to be comfortable sitting in that, you know, in a place for a couple hours, and to be on the water, and especially when things don't necessarily go as serenely as we want them to, if the weather changes or the wind or whatnot. I think that layer of foundation goes a long way just to planting, you know, seeds for future paddlers. Assuming that, you know, they get comfortable with being in a boat, eventually as they get older, they're going to want to do some work. They're going to want to feel like they're one of the adults too. And I think they'll start honing in on skills that way. And all of this is just toward a graduation of becoming their own independent, autonomous paddlers. I'd say in terms of, you know, getting in a kayak, I would say maybe an age range of like 8 to 10 at that point is probably a good area. And a smaller boat, of course, would be better, just something that's a little bit more proportional to their own size. That doesn't necessarily mean like a whitewater boat, because those boats are specifically designed for rapids and doing tricks in them. You'd still want a boat small in size, but that could track relatively well, so that each time you do a paddle stroke, you're going somewhat forward and you're not just spinning around in circles. But something, like I said, that's proportional so that they don't feel overwhelmed by it and feel like it's just too much work, or they're not doing it right and they'll, you know, want to give up because they feel like they're not doing it right. So I'd start off with a canoe, get them comfortable with that, and then find something a little bit more basic, but you know, that's affordable for you to get them in a boat on a, you know, gently moving water, river, gentle current, a little bit of a quiet lake too, just to, you know, bite-sized pieces. So
at 2 years old.
Yeah.
You don't want them to feel like, oh, I'm done with this. You want them, you know, I wouldn't even take a 2 year old out for an hour. My personally wouldn't. For sure.
Yeah. I think I remember Darren Bush of Rutabaga, even on your show, Larry, yeah, saying that he has a formula, I think, about dividing in half the age of the child by how much time you have, you're exposing them to the water, something like that. I may not have those numbers right, but I agree with you. Short bite-sized chunks, and that you're, you know, incrementally increasing, just so they get more acclimated to it.
There you go, Brad. Thank you so much. Steve in Madison would like to hear what you think needs to be in a first aid kit for paddling and camping.
Well, that is an outstanding question. There's going to be, I'd say, certain bare necessities, and then there'll be, you know, quote unquote luxuries.
Oh, I think we did.
Of course, you're going to want to have bug spray, sun repellent. I bring ibuprofen. I bring triple bacterial ointment for cuts. cortisone for any itching that you get into, whether it's bugs or plants. Aloes, of course, good for that. I like to have a pair of tweezers for ticks. Duct tape for anything, because you just never know. Sometimes you have to do first aid work to your boat, not just to your own body. You know, some people, of course, get more involved with snake venom kits, and that's all fine and good if you're in the place where you're worried about that. But otherwise, I think that might take up some room. But, you know, a canister or small pack of biodegradable wipes are always good just for cleaning different surfaces. Off the top of my head, you could fill a bag with as much as you want or as little, I mean, depending on your own preferences. But off the top of my head, I'd say those are the basic necessities I'd recommend.
Yeah. Emily emailed to ask what the Black Earth Creek is like for kayaking these days. Her family's interested in half-day paddle, but aren't sure if cattle gates or other obstructions are an issue.
Yeah, that's a great question. And it really depends on where you start. I happened to be on Black Earth Creek, two or three weekends ago. So the trip I really recommend, it's in the book I wrote, is starting at Olson Road, which is just by the high school on Highway 14, and then ending your trip at Lyons Park. There's a new boat landing there called John's Landing. It's impossible to miss. Two really good access points. It's a short trip. It's only 3 or 4 miles long. But you get in the beginning of the trip, you're surrounded by some rolling hills, just where the Driftless basically begins in that part of Dane County. And you go through a couple of fun rapids, nothing technical, really nothing inherently dangerous. Wear your life jacket, but you'll be fine. And then you go through town, through backyards, in a kind of quaint, neat setting. You'd probably just be on the river for 2 hours, depending on how fast you go. Water levels are usually reliable. There are no cattle gates in that section. When we did it 2 or 3 weeks ago, there were no downed trees or obstructions. It was all pretty smooth sailing.
Ah. And Jessica in De Pere called for suggestions for a good kayak or canoe trip for teens around the De Pere area, a day kind of trip.
Oh, a day trip. There are sections of the Fox River itself in De Pere that aren't too bad. Some of them you want to stay away from because of the industrial dams, but not all of them are that bad. The Manitowoc River, just a little bit south of there, has some really fun sections with moving water. No crazy rapids per se, but good splashy fun. Just south of there, there's lots of sections of the Sheboygan that would be good for teens. It's moving water, it's clear water, wildlife is good, but you don't really have to worry about serious hazards in most of the stretches. We have lots of information on milespaddled.com about both of those rivers. We have a statewide map, so you could see where you live and then zoom in with the different places we've been to see what's near you. And then click on any of those pins, and it'll open up the trip report with a whole smorgasbord of information for you.
That is really cool, a really cool site, milespaddle.com. And, of course, your book, Canoeing and Kayaking, South Central Wisconsin, 60 Paddling Adventures Within 60 Miles of Madison, is obviously a great resource as well. You know, you met John Roberts.
I did. I had the great joy of making his acquaintance and I believe future friendship just this past weekend. It's a long story. I know we don't have time for it, but I do want to tell everybody that they are in for a real treat in the next second half of the show. John is the epitome of a gentleman and a scholar, and the story he has of Breakwater Falls is really going to be fun.
It is indeed, and I'll tell you what, talking about fun, Timothy, it's been fun talking with you. It always is.
Oh, thank you, Larry. It's truly my pleasure.
I hope you'll be with us again. Come back and be with us?
You bet. It's be an honor. Thanks to you, Jill, Tyler, and all the staff at WPR.
Thank you, Timothy. Timothy Bauer, again, for a lot of great information about paddling, take a look at their website, milespaddled.com. And, of course, his book, Canoeing and Kayaking, South Central Wisconsin, 60 Paddling Adventures Within 60 Miles of Madison. Well, talking about our next guest coming up, John Roberts, how do you lose a waterfall? Especially when it's Wisconsin's sixth largest. We'll find out from John Roberts next on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.